Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I hope you've had a good week. I've had quite a nice week. Well, it was my birthday, so that's always good, even if it's lockdown, I suppose. And it did fall on World Book Day this year. Normally World Book Day is 1st of March, isn't it? Anyone with kids will know that you have to come up with costumes for school. Oh man, I remember those days. That was always such a nightmare, trying to kind of compete with great costumes that your kids get dressed up in. Anyways, so we didn't have any of that. My kids are a bit older now anyway. But my birthday fell on World Book Day, which obviously I took as license to shout about my own book. Why not? I mean, if you can't talk about your book on your birthday when it's World Book Day, when can you? So I did a little bit of promo for the book, which was great. Got and did a few radio shows, and also I'm on some podcasts, which, I love being on the other side of the mic as well. Obviously, I love sharing this stuff. And it was quite interesting because I did one of the radio interviews I did. The presenter was very honest. She said that the company had contacted her, publisher had contacted the station and said, do you want to interview Genuinely Grace? And she said, oh yeah, she's that, you know, the one who works for Radio 2. Yeah, I'd love to interview her. And then they said, she's written a book called Happy, Healthy, Sober. Right, okay. Not sure then. But we went ahead. And as she said, she actually really loved the book because it is a totally non-judgmental read. So if anyone is thinking to themselves, oh my goodness, she's going to, you know, bash the book at me. Definitely not. So I'm on a couple of podcasts as well. I'm on a podcast with Kai Graham, who is just a great parenting expert, really, really knows her stuff. And so her podcast is out. We have a really good chat on there about the whole thing of being present for your kids, which, of course, when you're drinking too much booze, you just really can't be. So that's Kai's podcast. I'll put a link to these as well. And I'm also on a podcast with Rosalind Palmer, Monkey Biz. That's kind of aimed more at people who are experts and have their own business. But we have a really good chat on there as well. And then I'm almost certain that this week is the release of the episode I've done with Love Sober. So I've interviewed the gals from Love Sober on this podcast. They've interviewed me once before. And this time it's Kate from Love Sober interviewing me about the book. And again, we have a really good chat about self-care. And, you know, both of us have got experiences. But also, you know, how both of us, because we both work as coaches, have seen the most incredible changes in other people. And I think that's obviously why we do it, isn't it? Because, you know, any of us can keep this stuff to ourselves. I did go through a phase where I thought, I'm not going to tell anyone about this. Why should I? But I reached a point where I couldn't not. It just didn't seem right that if I had this kind of, I don't know, little magic golden nugget that kind of sorts out pretty much everything, at least it underpins everything, how can I not share that? So anyways, there you go. There's a few podcasts if you're interested in listening to some others as well as mine, and you want to hear different aspects of my story and stuff again. So they're all out this weekend. I'm pretty sure they're all out now. Oh, and there was one more as well, actually, Conscious Body with Estelle Ramos. That's another podcast that I was on last week. So there's a few to check out. I'll put some links up for you. Just a reminder that we've got some great competitions. Make sure you do check out imperfectlynatural.com as well as thesoberclub.com, because there's some really good competitions. I've just launched my Platinum Awards on there. So for anyone who doesn't know, with my other hat on, I do wear a few hats, I deal with my holistic living stuff, and we aim to recognise the best in natural and organic products, but also services and well-being authors and stuff like that. So I might have to enter my own book, right? So on imperfectlynatural.com, we write blog posts and promote some of these lovely products, some of which I already know about and some of which are brand new to me. I've literally just launched those awards. Got some great celeb judges. Dr. Marilyn Glenville is going to be a judge for me. Cary Grant, Glynis Barber, and the lovely Joe Wood. So that runs all through the summer, really. So you, loads of time to enter some of the competitions, but do have a look. And of course, there's a category for alcohol-free drinks brands. Obviously, why would I not? And as you know, over these few weeks, I'm focusing on a few different drinks brands because... again, while when I do these radio interviews, it's always so interesting when you've got something different and new to promote, because you can see how it lands, and you know, you can see the kind of questions that you get from people who are, you know, brand new to this. And many of the radio presenters that I'm talking to had never considered the stuff I'm talking about. They hadn't considered that they might be a grey area drinker. They hadn't considered that their life might be better without the booze, you know, whether to reduce or stop drinking completely. But the book has genuinely kind of challenged them and opened their eyes a little bit, so that they're now thinking, wow, you know, I wonder whether I could have more productivity, feel better, have less anxiety. So, you know, I know it's sowing seeds. But anyways, what I was going to say was the thing that many of them ask is, well, but what will I drink? And not everyone has quite made this connection yet. You know, my mantra, keep the ritual, change the ingredients. Absolutely keep having a lovely drink at a certain time, if that's what you like to do, in a lovely glass. And don't make it a cup of tea, because that, you know, will make your unconscious mind fed up. Because, yeah, you can have a cup of tea in the morning. Of course you can. But when everyone else is cracking open something bubbly or something that looks nice in a glass, of course you want to do exactly the same, and why shouldn't you? So, you know, as you know, I'm a really big fan of great alcohol-free drinks, everything from, you know, kombuchas and artisan tonics through to, you know, the beers and the wines and everything else. So I am focusing on a few brands for a few weeks. And this week, we've got a great competition from Wilfred's, Spritz gift set from Wilfred's to give away, non-alcoholic aperitif. And I thought it'd be great to chat to Chris, the founder. So we've teamed up with them this week, and you're going to get a chance to hear a little bit about Chris's story. I love finding out about the people behind the brand. I just think it's fascinating how people get to end up creating these drinks, particularly when they don't even come from that background. So we're going to get a chance to hear Chris's story. And then also in the show, my guest is Joseph James. Now, I interviewed Joseph a long time ago. He's a coach and a money mindset coach and strategy expert. And he did a piece for us in the Sober Club. He did an exclusive kind of Q&A just for the Sober Club members around money mindset and abundance. And I thought, wow, I've got to run an interview on the podcast, because I do think this links to ditching the booze or being sober. I do think it's really interesting. So many of us have got limiting beliefs. We've got limiting beliefs around all kinds of stuff, but money is often a big one. And also there's this whole bizarre thing where we spend a ton of money on booze, but it's almost like that doesn't count. That money doesn't count. And you know, one of my top tips is have a glass jar or a vase and watch the money mount up when you first stop drinking, because it's just an amazing feeling to see that money start to mount up in the jar. So yeah, that should be. I hope you'll really enjoy that interview with Joseph, and that will inspire you towards more self care and bringing more abundance into your life, whatever that means for you. First off, though, enjoy this interview with Chris. My guest is Chris Wilfred Hughes, who is the founder of Wilfred. So we slipped that name in there, your middle name. Hi, Chris. Lovely to chat to you.
Hi, Janie. Lovely to meet you too.
Yeah, I'd love to chat to you a little bit about your story. So I came across your lovely drink, and you know, it's a lovely quirky name, as you say, you know, your middle name, and just such a gorgeous bottle. I mean, it just looks so beautiful. But just before we get into all the packaging and all of that, just tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Chris Wilfred Hughes, the founder of Wilfred's, and so I've got background that, you know, if I'm honest, it doesn't completely make sense. It wasn't a direct, straightforward route to making a non-alcoholic aperitif drink. But so I've gone through being an engineer, where I used to design Japanese trains, and I was also had a job title as an inventor, which was involved in coming up with new ideas for businesses. And but I've always had a passion in drinks. I've always had a passion in well-made cocktails, whether at the start alcoholic and now non-alcoholic. As my lifestyle's changed, to be honest. And you know, I just didn't want to drink like I used to, and it's just not a big part of my life, alcohol, and I didn't want it to be. So for me, it was really important to create something that had that flavour, that I still that complexity, but which was without the side effects or the negative effects of alcohol. So so I've gone on this long journey to eventually follow my passion, which is in the drinks industry and making drinks and cocktails and natural botanical distillers in this case, natural botanical aperitif.
And just tell us a bit about how the botanicals are distilled then, because I was looking at your website and you explain a little bit about it. But you say it's distilled traditionally, but for anyone who's never worked in the drinks industry, tell us what that means.
The reality is, because it's a non-alcoholic drink rather than an alcoholic drink, you have to be a little bit creative in the way that you get the flavors out of the different botanicals. So it's not always the same process that works. So sometimes you use distillation, in this case, sort of in steel drums, but sort of an old-fashioned style distillation to extract those flavors, especially for those aromatic flavors in particular. But the another side of part of the way we do it is actually sort of maceration, so allowing the botanicals to slowly let their flavor sort of come out into the drink, and it's about finding the different processes that work best to create a complex flavored drink. And so it's not straightforward, to be honest. but it does take a few old traditional methods in order to make this drink.
Yeah, and tell us a bit about the flavors that you chose then, because I love the fact that you've got things like bitter rosemary, is that right? You've got yeah. it tastes really grown up. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, it's a bitter orange and rosemary drink in particular. It does use other botanicals, but it all started so I all started in my kitchen originally. I was making this drink, this non-alcoholic drink, and I was trying botanicals, 50, 60 different botanicals from all around the world. I tried some, I've lived in Japan, so I tried some Japanese hibiscus. I lived in Argentina, so I tried some Argentinian mate. But actually the flavors that worked best were, it turns out, not from all around the world, but the rosemary from my mum's garden. And the bitter orange from my dad's marmalade. So those are the two flavors that worked best. But with that, it's also balanced out with, a little bit of rhubarb, which gives it a bit more of an earthy note, as well as some clove, which just like the rhubarb, actually gives it a bit of an earthy note as well. So it uses various different botanicals in order to create a complex drink that is delicious as a spritz.
And for anyone who's worried about calories, what part does that play? Is there any sort of anything to sweeten it, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we do think that actually using natural beet sugar is what it does. It adds a little bit of thickness to it, which you get in alcoholic drinks, whilst being non-alcoholic. But it is about 4 to 5 times less calories and less sugar than the alcoholic equivalent spritzes. So it is considerably less. And if you're making a spritz at home with tonic water, you're looking at well under 50 calories for a spritz.
Yeah, and of course you can just have it served over ice.
Exactly, and you serve it over ice. The best way to drink it is you serve it over ice with some tonic. So Wilfred's, one part Wilfred's, two parts tonic. And that makes, if you've got rosemary or slice of orange, even better as a garnish. And that makes delicious spritz.
Great. And what's your plan for the future then for the brand? Well, I mean, how has it been for you in terms of, the way the whole alcohol-free drinks market has opened up? Where do you guys sort of fit into that picture? Are you going to be, sort of forever artisan, as it were? Or will you be in the supermarkets, in the bars, if they ever open?
Yeah, it's a good question. The first thing is it's really exciting, this market, which is one... I mean, we started over two years ago now, but only launched last year, because the time it takes to create a really complex drink that tastes good is not a quick and easy process. but um, I always found that I had to pivot before I even launched, because the plan was always to make a drink that was good for bars, restaurants, that you could really enjoy when you're out and about. But actually, we've you know, with the pandemic, we've had to move online very quickly. But what's fantastic is it's such a easy drink to make at home, while still elevating that evening in type moment.
Yeah.
So at the moment, it's very much, you know, we're still focused on online, but as and when things open up, we're hoping to get into the bars, restaurants, and be available absolutely in retail in due course.
Yeah. And what about expanding the range? Is that a plan?
Yes, I will keep you on tentative
for that one. I mean, it's, you know, not like you haven't got enough to do, obviously.
Well, no, absolutely. I think we will be expanding flavors, ranges, types of drinks. In due course. But at the moment, it was so important for me to first get one drink that tasted delicious. Because it's true, you're sort of, in the non-alcoholic world, you're put up against a sort of pedestal in comparison with sort of alcoholic equivalents. And so it's so important to get a good flavour. So I put a lot of time and energy making sure that this drink was just the right flavour, and a lot of lessons learned. So I'm looking forward to launching a few new ones, hopefully later this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I mentioned the packaging. I mean, the bottle's so important. It's so much part of it, isn't it? Because, you know, we when we're drinking alcohol, you know, part of that is looking at these lovely bottles on the shelf, you know, and that are sort of calling to us. And we do want that same feeling of actually we're drinking something, you know, from a nice bottle that looks good. You know, we don't just want any old liquid from any old plastic.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, drinking an alcoholic drink is so much more than the alcohol. You know, there's a whole experience that goes behind it. It's the whole, you know, how people make the cocktail, how it looks, feels, tastes. And so a lot of work went into getting the right design that still showed that this was an aperitif and that you can drink it as a spritz, that it had those, you know, those hints towards an alcoholic drink, but you know, completely without the alcohol. But that experience is still there. And for me, that was incredibly important, because this is, you know, to put it simply, it's an adult experience that is quite premium and where you can really share in that experience with your friends, whether they're drinking or not. So,
Great. Love it. Thank you so much, Chris. It's great to chat to you. It's such a great drink. And thanks for offering us a great competition as well. We really, really appreciate that. It's really interesting to hear your story. And maybe we'll, you know, I'd love to interview you in a year's time. And let's see what's happened then. You know, maybe there'll be more in the range. And it'd be really fascinating to see how a year in this industry changes things, won't it?
I know. It's really grown so much in the last few years. It's exciting to see where we'll be next year. And I'd love that.
Yeah, it'd be great. I mean, I was saying to somebody the other day, you know, if it had been, I don't know, certainly 10 years ago, possibly even 5, it would be so much more difficult to ditch the booze, you know, particularly during a, you know, a pandemic, because you just really, at the end of the day, you just want something to cheer you up. And there would have been nothing, you know, other than a couple of really dodgy beers. So thank goodness. I really appreciate it, Chris. Thank you so much for your time.
No, thanks a lot. Thanks, Janie.
So don't forget, you can go to thesoberclub.com and check out that competition to win Wilfred's non-alcoholic aperitif. I think it's worth about 30 quid, so make sure you enter that. As promised, here's that interview with Joseph. My guest is Joseph James. I'm so thrilled to have Joseph on again. We've had a chat before. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Lovely to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's lovely to chat with you. It was lovely that you were part of our panel a couple of weeks ago.
That was really special.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? We were talking about does sobriety give you superpowers? Does being sober give you superpowers? And also, you've been a guest on the podcast before. And I really wanted to chat to you because, you know, I know you wear a few hats yourself, but one of the things that you, you know, part of your work is around money mindset, of course, and limiting beliefs. And this is something, it just comes up time and time and time again with the clients that I work with in the sober club. Limiting beliefs around all kinds of things, of course, which I'd love to talk to you generically, but obviously around money is such a big one, and it's interesting because initially when we talk about these kind of topics, people might think, oh, well, that's not really relevant to me because I don't run a business. But yeah. actually, it's relevant to all of us, isn't it? Really relevant to all of us. Anyways, tell us a little bit about your background for anyone who hasn't heard you interviewed before.
So I run Money Mindset and Strategy. We have an online academy called LMS Academy for business owners. We now do coach training and certification, and I, of course, run a private coaching practice. My background, I was a publicist for 10 years. So I did PR and media, lived in Soho, did the whole like London AbFab thing, which was very fun. And now I live in Ibiza and run my coaching business from here.
Great. And just tell us a little bit about your sober journey, because I know that that was yeah. part of it as well. And that was something that we connected. And then I found out that you'd also ditched the booze. I didn't even know that when I first
really
invited you. I think I really wanted to talk to someone around money and mindset. And but in a way, you know, it's so relevant. It's so part of it, yeah. isn't it? It's so much part of getting what you want, really.
It is. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me on again. It means so much to me to be able to talk about sobriety and money mindset and business. And I just wanted to, you know, it's very special to be able to share this with other people. So thank you. My sober journey is an interesting one. So I was living in Soho. I was working in PR. I was doing club nights, all of the things you would imagine, like an episode of AbFab if it was done a bit later on. And I think I talked about this on the podcast with you when we first connected, but you know, I just got really bored of the hangovers. I just yeah. got really, I'm going to be a little bit vulnerable here, which I hope is okay, but I got really bored of feeling hungover. My mood would just hit the floor, and I always associated celebration with alcohol.
Yeah.
Feeling better, alcohol. Meeting with clients, very PR, alcohol. Everything was related to alcohol for me. And I looked back at so many times in my life where I tried to sort of stop drinking, and I would do a few weeks, I'd do maybe a month or 6 weeks, feel better, look better, things would improve, and I'd go, oh, it's fine now. Mm. And I think what I started to learn very intuitively was I always knew I wanted to run a business where I helped people achieve their goals and ditch limiting beliefs. But I'll be really honest, I felt like I had to walk my talk a little bit more before I actually launched it in a big way. And I kind of was very quiet about it. I think you were the only person I publicly talked to about it, if I'm really honest.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. Yeah. Just on that note, just for a moment, isn't that sort of almost shame thing so interesting? I've said many times yeah. that I had that for several months. Actually, I didn't tell yeah. anyone.
Yeah. I felt very safe with you. It was more that I was talking a lot about money mindset and business, and I just felt like I wanted to talk about it, but I wanted to almost get it to a certain place myself before I talked about it. Anyway, very long story short, I ditched the booze, and I remember having that last glass of wine and kind of just saying to myself, done, just done. And over the next few weeks and months, it was almost like from a film. Suddenly my intuition came back. I felt brighter. All these things I've been putting off doing, writing books, writing more courses, doing all these things, they just fell into place. I mean, there were some very like, not to get too woo-woo with you, but there were some very mystical things that happened in that first 6 months as well. All these things I'd been waiting to happen suddenly almost came in. And I truly believe it was because I respected myself enough to acknowledge sobriety is the best thing for me. And actually I remember my first big, I had a big, great result with business. And I had this moment of going, oh my God, I don't have a glass of champagne. What do I do? And it was like, you don't need a glass of champagne to celebrate. It's okay. You know, it was really, it was finding a lot of associations again with thing. But I hope I'm not going too off topic.
No, not at all. I mean, it's just that it's so ingrained, isn't it? It is so ingrained. And as you say, we can't say the word celebration without immediately thinking of champagne. We can't buy a birthday card, for God's sake, you know.
Yeah,
so exactly. it's true. You must have noticed that in terms of your productivity, things changed.
Like that. I was always very good at running a business. I ran my own PR business for a while. I was a freelance consultant in PR. So I was essentially a one-man business, but I always I always planned around hangovers, not like every day, but all these things, suddenly I just had the time and energy to do. And the more I did them, the more got done. That sounds very cheesy, but you know, the more I did them, the more got done. And suddenly I started the podcast, Money, Mindset and Strategy. I started writing my courses again. Those took off. I always had a good client base, but it was always very, not behind the scenes, but it was always very kind of low key. I never was very public with it. And then the more the sobriety kind of solidified, the more all these different things happened. And I just felt that, I mean, I'll be honest, I sometimes think, God, imagine if I'd done this 5 years ago.
Yeah. As you know, it's my only regret.
Yeah, it really is.
Really. So let's talk about a little bit about the limiting beliefs. Let's just talk limiting beliefs generally then.
Okay.
Tell us your thoughts around, you know, what goes on for so many of us that we hold ourselves back.
Well, I just wanted to touch on something quickly that came to me in the intro. On the surface, my work is obviously money, mindset and strategy, but it's actually about your self-worth, your self-esteem, your self-confidence. You know, I coach people around the world with my private practice and also with my academies and my courses. And I always say to people, this is not just about money. This is about how you take care of yourself, how you show up for yourself. You know, two people could go into a room and one would be very happy with a certain day rate and the other would go, that's not enough for me, actually. Mm. And it's completely related to self-worth, in my opinion, and how much you feel you deserve to have and keep. So I use money in my examples, but to anyone listening to this or the podcast or anything, please understand you can still take these principles and apply them to your relationships, your home life, your personal life. So that's that bit. In terms of limiting beliefs, we all have a set of beliefs about the world. Some work really well for us, actually, and it's important that we acknowledge those. But limiting beliefs are things like, and I give this exercise to clients, so I would encourage anyone listening to do if you feel comfortable. Think about an area that you don't have what you want in. Could be money, could be anything. And complete the sentence, I never or I always. Mm. Something like that. Notice your always and your nevers. Those are very closely connected to your set of beliefs. Because, you know, no guilt in this at all, but two people can have a very different experience in the same room based on their experiences and their beliefs. I have clients who will say things like, well, of course I would charge that day. Why wouldn't I? There's zero resistance to having that kind of income. Other clients will do a lot of mindset work on giving them permission to actually say, you know what? No, it's not okay to call me on the weekend. Because that's a money boundary as well. So it's really about looking at what doesn't work for you anymore. That's a limiting belief.
That is so true. And you're right. We are all different. And it does all stem back to our sort of sense of self-worth. But also I think that, you know, we can be open to change, right? It doesn't mean, I don't think it should be one of those things where we go, because so many people say to me, oh, this is how I am. This is my identity. Mm-hmm. I am a very anxious person. You know, someone said that to me on a coaching call. I am a very anxious person. Well, you know, how about we look at that then? Because you weren't born anxious, right? There are some things we can reframe, we can change. And on that note of the money thing, it's really interesting for me because years ago, I when my very first book came out, which was 15 years ago, scary, I kind of organically fell into having a business just on the back of the book, if you like. I hadn't planned anything at all. And I had absolutely no business skills whatsoever. And so I sort of launched into this work around promoting of natural products and natural brands. And before very long, I was working, 24/7 doesn't cover it. I mean, it was utterly ridiculous. I was, you know, sending emails at 2 a.m. It was just bonkers by anyone's standards and earning very little. I mean, really had almost no actual profit. I was just sort of so thrilled to be there kind of thing. And then as part of my training, I actually thought, okay, time to get some training. I did one of those kind of things around archetype branding. And I'm sure you've done that kind of work. But what came up out of that was with this particular system that I was looking at was that my kind of number one way of being, or what I really, when I was really in my flow, I was a kind of an alchemist. You know, I was someone who loved creating stuff and loved starting new projects.
Is this the Kendall Summerhawk system?
Yeah, yeah, Kendall's. Yeah,
I know
exactly.
Kendall's. I'm in one of her trainings.
Yeah, perfect. So you know all about it. So mm-hmm. So there I was, an alchemist. But my second was humanitarian. So I kind of wanted to give everyone everything. And obviously what had happened along the way is that the humanitarian had tipped over the alchemist, because I was just doing all of this stuff for free for every single hour God sent. And really not actually really supporting who I was meant to be or doing the right kind of work. So it was really fascinating. It was brilliant. And because of that, I was able to see, okay, well, you have to go with your number one, as it were. Yeah, so I absolutely had to get back to being an alchemist and creating and projects and all the rest of it. But I had to also tick that little humanitarian box. So yeah. So what I did was I started a connected with a charity, and all the projects we did raised a ton of money for this amazing little tiny little integrative cancer charity. So that was just perfect because it did that bit too. So I absolutely get this thing about our, you know, it's the nature versus nurture, isn't it? It's which bits of us, you know, which beliefs do we have that are great for us and do work for us, but which actually need a tweak. So true.
I like to, when I do my private coaching calls, one of the things I always start when the call, obviously past the hello, how are you, you know, bit, we go into self-praise. And I do this with my clients and I do it in my coach training. And we always spend a few minutes on self-praise. What would you like to celebrate about yourself? What was amazing this week? And so many people
can't do it.
They rush past it.
Yeah.
I did this really well, but my challenge this week, and I'll stop them. And I'm friends with my clients, or I'm very friendly, I should say. And I'll joke and go, no, we're not going to rush past it. We're going to sit in self-praise for a minute. And they'll go, okay. And obviously it's playful, but I'll say, allow the self-praise to be here. You did amazingly. Well done. I think so many people hear money mindset coaching and they think, oh my God, I've got to focus on all the things that aren't working. Actually, you don't. There's a large part of your money mindset that will be working fabulously for you. And you should praise that part of yourself and celebrate it. But with limiting beliefs, it's about the things that aren't working for you. So people who say, I am an anxious person, I would get curious and say, how have you assigned that identity to yourself?
Exactly.
And what identity would you like to be true for you? Oh, I'd like to be such and such. Okay, well, what would that version of you do now? You know, and it's almost playful, I think, if you start getting curious, and we all have that. I often say to people, I am is a powerful manifestation, right? I am is like, be very careful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or mindful, I should say.
Yeah. And you're right about the identity piece, because I do think that sometimes when people are ditching the booze, as we've said many times, amazing things can happen. You know, the growth can be incredible and people start to find out all sorts of new things about themselves, and they find they can grow and blossom in all kinds of ways. But sometimes they actually have to notice that they need to step into a new identity. Actually do take on that identity of someone who doesn't drink. It's cool to do
Absolutely.
That, right?
One of the things I do with, again, in my coaching, is we do this kind of upgrade session, and it's a series of like 7 questions I take people through, and it's based on who do you want to be? And I'll ask some questions like, how does that person start their day? What affirmations does that person use? How does that person handle this? And it's the same with not drinking. When I was in my early stages of being sober, I would regularly say to myself, okay, you're as a sober person, how would I handle this? And I always think it's interesting, because if you go into a room thinking, I can't drink, I can't have that, it creates an energy of lack and it creates an energy of frustration and like you're pushing up against it.
Yeah.
What I like to do is go, I'm cultivating sobriety. I'm cultivating feeling fabulous tomorrow. I'm cultivating feeling fresh and alert in a room full of potential networking contacts. Hello. So many people will say to me, oh, I met the CEO of like Netflix and I was drunk. And I'm like, oh, no judgment, obviously, but you just come on. So I think it's important also to, with money, with anything, look at the state you want to cultivate, not the thing you don't want.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely right. Always look to what it is you want. Let's just talk a bit more about money then. What is this thing around money that affects so many of us? How does this come about? Just limiting beliefs that this oh well, like money's for someone else, and you know, all those phrases that we learned as a child. Well, actually, a lot of it goes back to how we were brought up, doesn't it? With this,
I think a lot of it is how you're brought up and your particular family tribe, and I think it's also a lot of the cultural stuff you take in, what programs you watch. You know, I remember reading a book years ago. I don't remember which one it was specifically, but there was the piece about money in it, that the author asked you to fill out the following or journal the following questions. And one of them was, rich people are.
Yeah.
People with money are. And I don't particularly go that extreme with the exercises that I do with my clients, but I'll often say to them, you know, we all have what I call a money ceiling, a ceiling of where we think it's safe for us to have money, how much we think it's safe for us to have and deserve. A very kind of fun example I like to use is, look at the Kardashians. Her money ceiling is so high. Mm. If someone says, here's 300 grand for a tweet, she'd go, okay, I can fit you in a week, no problem. Mm. Someone with a very low money ceiling would not be able to handle that. And they would go, I don't deserve it. I'm going to do it wrong. They're going to want it back. Who do I think I am? Mm. It's about really finding out where your money safe zone is and looking at, actually, it's my belief is that life kind of molds itself to our beliefs, especially about ourselves. And actually the first piece is really opening up what's available to you and understanding that money is, it both is a big deal and isn't a big deal, if that makes any sense. And I think that
it does make sense. You know, I mean, I've done quite a lot around this, but I know there'll be people listening who, you know, will be thinking, well, that's all very well for you, but I haven't actually got any right now, you know, and because of lockdown, the jobs have gone, really, really difficult times. So where does someone start when money is really, really tight, perhaps through no fault of their own? You know, it may not be that they've been boozing it all away. Although that, of course, is another interesting factor, isn't it? The amount of money we spend on drink, my God. But, you know,
that was a huge one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, most of us just don't even count that. We just don't. I was absolutely in denial about how much money I spent. In denial. That's why I always tell everyone to get a glass jar and put the cash in so they can look at it.
I did a savings account. I would put the money over every day online.
Yeah.
And I watched it grow, and I was actually both very pleased and mortified.
Yeah, exactly. Because we just don't count it. It doesn't count that money. I mean, I remember back thinking, I remember I used to see like a new kind of tea, like pucker teas, whatever, I don't know, Regular. Turmeric gold. And I'd think, that's £4. I don't know.
I know, crazy, right?
In the same breath, you instantly buy a bottle of wine for £8. I mean, it's just laughable, absolutely laughable. Anyways, what was I saying? Yeah, so for the person who really genuinely it's money is really super tight right now.
Okay.
What do we say to them? Because you can't just say, well, obviously it's your limiting beliefs.
No, absolutely. And the way I coach and teach is never accusing, or it's never from a place of guilt, and it's certainly never from a place of finger pointing. What I believe is that in that situation, if you are listening and money is tight, or you're in any kind of charged situation, there's a lot of emotional charge around it. The first thing is to be very kind to yourself with your self-talk and very soothing. Do not use panic language. And do not blame yourself. Everybody makes mistakes. If you feel like you've made one, you're human. We all do it. But don't catastrophize it. Stay very grounded. And what I would advise you do, firstly, on a mindset piece, is step into the identity of someone who's resourceful. So when we're resourceful, we can think of things to do, or people to reach out to, or things we can sell. You know, the amount of people I'll speak to in a coaching session, and we'll talk about their brand assets, and they'll say, oh, I've got some classes I recorded last year and an ebook I did last month that didn't sell. And I'll go, great, you've got an e-course there. We can start selling that for 150 online. You know, I'm making that up in a very quick way. But when you're resourceful, you can tune into the opportunities around you.
Yeah. And of so course, being sober will help you with being resourceful. Very much so.
Hugely so.
Yeah.
Firstly, because you don't have the hangover demon.
Exactly.
You know, the shame spiral. God. Anyway, I'm laughing about something, but I remember once trying to plan something with my business before I got sober, thinking like, do you know what? I'll do it tomorrow when the hangover's gone. Yeah. Anyway, being resourceful. So you want to practice stepping into that identity, calm yourself down, get yourself nice and centered. And you say, okay, if I felt really resourceful and proactive, what are three things I could do now to generate money?
Yeah.
What are three things I can easily do? Or five, yeah, if you're comfortable doing five. Get resourceful. Look at things around you that you can, you know, you've made or you've created or you can sell, or services that you can offer. There's always things we can do to generate money online and with the people around us. Obviously, yeah, lockdown has rules on physical contact, but get resourceful. And I would also say get out of any shame or blame.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Please. And how can we start to change our limiting beliefs then around money and around our self-worth? What are a couple of tips you might give that would work generically?
So I think the first is to really focus on being your own best friend. And this is a phrase that gets thrown around a lot. And I want to really, when I finally understood this, it clicked, like kind of like the sobriety thing. When I finally did it, it clicked. If you had a best friend and or someone in your life and they were constantly putting you down and not keeping promises to you and a bit rude to you, you wouldn't really want to hang around with them and you wouldn't think very highly of them. You want to treat yourself like your own best friend. So instead of shaming or blaming or you always do this, you want to do the forgiveness work. And I always say to my clients, if you forgave your partner, they would ask you not to bring it up again. Mm. So I'd ask you to do the same with yourself. You do self-forgiveness, you don't bring it up again. Or if you do, you go back to the forgiveness piece. Be very kind to yourself. And then you want to look at, and this is where I think sometimes my approach is very different. I don't believe in looking too much at where your belief came from. Mm. We're never going to really know, are we? There's no actual concrete answer. Decide what you want to be true for you, exactly, and start, yeah, moving in that direction. Mm. A very practical example would be, let's say I never get paid for my work is what you feel is true. Okay. Again, no self-judgment or anger or anything like that. You want to say, it's easy for me to be paid very well for my work. Just play with that affirmation, repeat it to yourself all the time, write it down, and then ask yourself, if that were true for me, even if you don't believe it, if that was true for me, what would I do today?
Yeah.
What would that version of me do? And that will change things so quickly for you. Just going in the direction of not thinking about when I'm there. Imagine you're there now.
Yeah. Love it. Fantastic. I mean, we could talk for hours about this stuff. It's really fascinating. You know, but I think it, the whole limiting beliefs thing, mm-hmm, once you notice it, that's the first thing, isn't it? You have to notice it first. When you're just completely living it, the person I spoke to who said to me, you know, I'm always anxious, I'm an anxious person, unless I challenged that, she never would have challenged it, because she thought it was her identity and she hadn't noticed that there was anything unusual about that. It's just, it was a fact. She didn't see it as a limiting belief. Yeah. She saw it as a fact that, you know, just as night will follow day, she saw that as a fact. But of course it's not, it's movable. And that's what I love. So you must have seen some amazing sort of stories of transformation then with people that you work with.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I really, you know, when you said your clients said, I'm an anxious person, what I often do is, I get very playful in my coaching. So I don't do the very heavy approach of like overly asking people to go into the past. I get quite, you know, we get very playful. So one of the things, it's coming to mind now, a particular client, she's been with me a year and she did say I could share this. I just want to clarify that. But she had this real issue with, you know, charging beyond a certain point for her services. So rather than getting really heavy into the coaching, I'll go, what would high end do you do? Because I'm hearing quite low end thinking right now. Like we'll get really playful and she'll go, oh my God, I'd put my prices up and I would do X, Y, Z. And she doubled her income in a year through doing the physical work, but releasing this belief. Her particular belief was that she wasn't worth it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. You know? And you've just reminded me as well that when I did a I did a talk at a Hay House conference, and it was when Louise Hay was talking about mirror work, and you know how she does all this stuff about mirror work. And one of the things that she used to talk about was how we have to, it's a really good idea to look in the mirror and say, I love you. And everyone's, I don't think so. That doesn't feel very comfortable. You know, but of course, it's so important to be able to get to do that. And then what's really interesting is if we add another layer onto that, if you're talking about money and what you're worth, you know, in inverted commas, you can do that looking in a mirror. And actually do that little exercise. And that's really fascinating. I've done that with clients where I've asked them to stand in front of a mirror and talk to the mirror and actually say, well, here's what I'm offering and this is the cost. And just see how it lands in your body. It's so interesting because if the cost is ridiculously low, you kind of wiggle around. It's not quite right. And if the cost is ridiculously high, that doesn't work either. And then you sort of settle on this sweet spot. Yeah. It's because it's all about your own worth, actually looking at yourself. It comes back to authenticity again, doesn't it?
That's
hard when you don't have a sense of self-worth. That used to be my problem. That's why I didn't feel authentic, because I didn't have that sense of self-worth. So I couldn't meditate, or, you know, if someone had asked me about the self-love piece, it would have been, well, no, that's not for me, which was bizarre when you consider the work I was doing.
It's interesting that it's like the Course in Miracles says, we teach what we most need to learn, right? So I sometimes will read stuff back from when I first got sober and was writing about money mindset, and I'm like, that was for me. You know, I'll read it back and go, that was so for me. But I created a deck of cards a few months ago called Money Mindset Power Thoughts.
Great. They look wonderful.
I'll send you a copy, a deck. It's money mindset affirmations and coaching questions. And one of the cards is, if I chose to see myself as powerful, capable, and brilliant, I would ... And I play with this with clients. They have a deck of the cards as well. And we'll often say, doesn't matter what you think is true right now. If you chose to see yourself as powerful, so I use the word chose, right? It is amazing what that does in the body, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And people will often, I particularly love this when this happens with clients, we'll do a few sessions and they'll go, I think I was really undercharging. I'm like, oh yeah. You know, we chuckle about it, but when it's so in the body and we're so ingrained in that belief that we aren't good enough, we attract people, clients. You know, I did a podcast yesterday, I think, on three money blocks that you need to get rid of in your business. And one of them was this belief that it's nice to undercharge and it's nice to keep your fees low. It actually isn't. You're setting a bad example. You're disrespecting your own self, really. And this belief I see a lot of is, if I charge low prices, I'll get more clients. You actually won't. You'll get more of the wrong type of clients. When you charge well for your services, whatever that looks like for you, you get clients who do the work. They appreciate the work. They respect you and your services and themselves a lot more.
Yeah.
And actually, what I love to say to people is, like, if you chose to believe that you were worth that fee, what would that feel like? And you sort of just, again, you play with that.
And I think this also you know, spins into people. There'll be a lot of people listening who work, you know, work for someone else. You know, they are employees. But even then, and of course, there's not the same, there isn't really, you don't really have any leeway on what you earn. But it is interesting that you still really need to hold on to your own sense of self-worth. I remember years ago when I was working for a radio station, I remember that I needed my rate to go up. I just needed a rise, basically. And I did a little bit of work on that. And I realized that I would have gone into a meeting with this boss totally on the back foot, with a sort of do you think there's any chance? And the boss would have just said no. But I didn't. I did a little work beforehand and kind of reframed it all and got a really good sense of my own worth and went in with a completely different energy, and it worked.
It's something I teach is empowered money language. And that is actually an amazing example of that, because a lot of people will use what I call disempowering money language. So they'll say, sorry, I don't work for free. Why are you apologizing? Or they'll say, sorry, I have to charge for that. Or the one that really, I don't want to say bugs me, because it doesn't, but the one that makes me go, oh, why are you doing that to yourself, is, sorry, I have to send you an invoice. And you just think you've gone into that situation apologizing for receiving money.
Mm.
So what I coach on is like empowered money language, which would be, would love to help you with that. Here's a link to book.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Love to renew my contract for another 6 months with your station. Mm. Here's the fee that will work for me.
Yeah. It's so true. And also, you know, the other interesting thing around money, I'm going to have to stop soon. I could talk forever. But the other interesting thing that's coming back to me now, I remember some of the work I did in the past was another thing that Louise Hay used to say, which was, and this was a long time ago. So it was in the day when we used to have checks. And she used to say, you're too young to remember that, Joseph. She used to say, When you pay your gas bill, you know, when you write a check for your electricity bill, or your gas bill or whatever, give it a kiss, pop it in the envelope. Oh. So like her thing was, you don't only, it's not just about you receiving money with love, you send money with love.
So
you know, it's a thank you that I've got gas and electricity in my house. Thank you for that. And I'm going to kiss the check as I send it. Because most of us actually, we don't do that, do we? We're kind of furious while we're paying our bills. Like incensed that we've got to spend our hard-earned cash on something. But actually, when you reframe that and make it that it's just an energy, isn't it, ultimately? I know it doesn't feel like that sometimes.
I was actually coaching someone on that exact situation yesterday. And I said, you know, is often, I think when that happens, it's a belief that they're taking our money or a fear that we won't have more.
It always comes back to the fear of lack, doesn't it?
You know, and actually, if you chose again to believe that you were infinitely possible of creating abundance, how would you pay your bills?
Yes.
Because I said this in a workshop, I think it was about 2 years ago. And I said, you know, the abundance that we want for ourselves, we have to see others as having as well.
Yeah.
So you can't, for example, want to be paid really well, but then not want to pay any of your bills and not want to pay anyone else.
Yeah, because exactly. Exactly. It has to be like an exchange. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. My goodness, we could really talk forever, couldn't we? Tell us
a
bit about your work then and where people find you.
Thank you. So the website is moneymindsetandstrategy.com. We have MMS Academy, which is an online school really for business owners who want to do things like create different packages, different income streams and things like that. There's MMS Bootcamp, which is a 4-session kind of a money mindset booster on charging well for your services. And then we also have coach training, which is super exciting. I also do, you know, private coaching and mentoring packages. The podcast is Money Mindset and Strategy. It's all on the website.
Yeah,
and of course, if you'd like to chat with me or anything, you can look me up on Instagram, JosephJames_official.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Joseph.
Thank you.
I really appreciate chatting
with you.
So I hope that's inspired you to focus on abundance and don't forget the self-worth and the self-care. And all of that stuff. I do offer one-to-one coaching. I don't talk about this very often. I've got obviously very limited slots, but I do offer some one-to-one coaching. If that is of interest, drop me an email. I absolutely love doing it. Obviously, I don't have very, very many slots. I've got an awful lot going on. What I completely forgot to tell you guys is that I've finally succumbed and joined Clubhouse. Most people know about the kind of invite-only social media app. It's got that exclusivity thing going on at the moment where you have to have an invite, which I'll confess right up, I find really annoying because, you know, I don't have loads of invites to give people. So and I wish I did. So anyways, I think that's just the beginning. I think they're going to open it up. But at the moment, it's a little bit of that exclusivity thing. So it's a case of asking your friends if you want to join and see who's got invites. But for anyone who is on Clubhouse, you can find me there now at Janie Lee Grace. I had to come kicking and screaming to yet another social media monster platform to have to handle. But, you know, it is an audio platform. It's audio only for anyone who doesn't know. So you host what you call rooms on there on various topics. So obviously I'm going to be doing a bunch of rooms called Happy, Healthy, Sober. So if you are on Clubhouse, please follow me, check it out and come and join in one of my rooms. It's going to be a little bit like a podcast, but you can pop up and ask questions and comments. So, you know, over the weeks, I'll make sure I get some of my podcast guests to come and join me as well. So I'll do something on there along the lines of Happy, Healthy, Sober. at least once a week. So make sure you check that out. Don't forget the book then. I think I've mentioned it enough times, haven't I? it's a thing when you've got a book out. It really is a thing. I'd actually forgotten how much of a thing it is. But there you go. You can get a signed copy from me. If you go to thesoberclub.com, click on shop, you can get a signed copy, but sadly only in the UK at the moment. Or obviously you can get one on Amazon, and do please leave me a lovely review. And I love getting pics of the book. The book gets to go out far more than I do. Someone sent me a pic of the book on the beach, right by the sea. It's like, oh, wow. So, yeah, I'd always be very happy to see your pics of the book. And of course, let me know, your feedback. Let me know if you've enjoyed it. Similarly with the podcast, make sure you rate and review and share it and all of that if you've enjoyed it. Whatever stage you're at, don't forget, you are welcome to check out the Sober Club. It really is for everyone. If you're sober curious, you're so welcome. If you're year 6 or 7, you are also so welcome, because we really do focus on the everything. And, you know, it frustrates me when people sort of have this impression that they're going to stop drinking and that's it. They won't think about it again. And I just don't think it's like that. I think if you're someone who's been drinking for a lot of years, actually ditching the booze is such a massive thing, but it's just the beginning. It underpins everything else. You becoming the person you're meant to be, happier, healthier, more sober, happy, healthy, sober. It really is that. You're able to step into who you're meant to be. It is so not, in my opinion, just stopping drinking. It's everything else that stems from that, in my opinion, if you do it with the right intention. You know, I have heard of people, I think, I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but years ago I heard Frank Skinner being interviewed on something, or having a chat with Adrian Charles, I think it was. And the impression that came across from that conversation was that he wished he could drink, right? He wished that he could drink again, but because he considered himself someone who had been an alcoholic, he considered that he couldn't. I mean, you know, don't quote me, I need to go back and watch it. It's just my memory, and I know that that's what I took from that. And so the feeling was one of, oh, poor you, what a shame. But actually the reality is a world away from that. If we embrace the fact that we're doing the best thing we can ever do for our health and well-being, then it's all onwards and upwards. It's all the what's next. It's all, oh my goodness, now that I'm not drinking, now I can focus on getting healthy and well and eating really well and getting fit if I want to or need to, and creativity and purpose. And I can look at my relationships and I can recognize that I'm becoming more kind, and on and on. Anyways, all of that's in the book. All of that's in the Sober Club. You know where to find me, thesoberclub.com. And I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.